it gives me great pleasure to introduce Rick W. from Oxnard, but now resides in Thailand. So,
hi, everybody. My name is Rick Wilson. I'm an alcoholic from Oxnard. In the house, I like to obey the rules, so. What's up, Oxnard in the house? You know, I want to thank my buds here for coming up and buying me. You know, he didn't buy me dinner, so. But for coming up, and some of these guys have been with me for a long time. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous a long time ago, and I'd like to tell you that it hasn't been necessary for me to drink in all that time. But first of all, I want to welcome all the newcomers. Wait, come on back in here. This is important stuff. I'd like to welcome the newcomers, and also the first two guys who took a cake tonight for 1 and 3 years. You know, we're about the same age, and or at least I was the same age as they were when they, yeah, anyways, you know, it's been a while. And happy birthday to my friend, fine friend here. What was your name again?
Jerry.
Still is.
Good long friend, yeah. Still is. I'll do the jokes, pal, okay? I grew up in a small town in New England. A very small town in New England. And Santa Maria, do you have a motto? Like, Santa Barbara is, I think, the American Riviera?
Yeah, right.
What is Santa Maria?
Thanks for coming. See you later.
There's always one of those guys in the crowd, too, right? Oxnard is, I think it's Bakersfield by the Sea. And that's where I've lived for a long time, and I retired recently and moved to Thailand. And so it's nice to be here, and it's good to I've been here before. And I got to tell you, Kristen, I don't know if I can talk till 9:15. But I'll do the best I can. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous a long time ago. I was 26 years old. And it was sometime in July. I wonder about the guys who come in and say, it was a Wednesday night on the 3rd of December, and I was, you know, I have no idea. My life was, as far as I was concerned, my life was done. It wasn't worth living anymore. I was 26 years old. I was living a year past my expiration date. You know, when we guys, you know, grew up, some of us guys, you know, we picked a date, you know, and my date was I wasn't going to live past 25, so I didn't concern myself with schooling or careers or anything like that. I did go to high school. I went to high school for 4 years, and I quit my sophomore year, and it wasn't very attentive, you know, because I had other things to do. There was more important things to do, but my life had just gotten to the point. I just saw my name up on the board there. Am I speaking next week too? No. Where is she? Where is she? I don't see her. Well, I'm not going to come next week either. She's not sticking around. But anyways, I found that I was 26 years old, a year past my... Jimi Hendrix said, I know I'm going to die when it's my turn to die, so why don't you let me live my life the way I want to, you know? And then I realized he was already dead. And I wanted to die. Life had gotten to the point where it wasn't worth living anymore. It was just too tough. And it was sometime in July back in 1977, and I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for all the wrong reasons. Do we have anybody who came in here for the right reasons? Newcomers? Okay. I understand. But I didn't have a good reason to come at all, other than I was in a mental institution because I heard that if you got certified crazy, that you could collect SSI. So I checked myself into a mental institution. Camarillo State, anybody remember? Anybody, any alumni? It actually is a university now. It has a whole different ring on my resume. Not that I need a resume anymore, but Anyways, back then you could smoke in the meeting. Some of you remember that, right? As a matter of fact, I think it was mandatory. And right about now, the smoke level would be about here. In about 15 minutes, it'd be down here because we'd all be smoking and, you know, chain smoking and drinking coffee. And if you didn't chain smoke and drink coffee, we'd say, hey, maybe you're not an alcoholic, you know? But I was in the mental institution, and they you have to actually work for it to get certified crazy. They test you and stuff, you know? And so I was in the process of testing. But the state would let you smoke in the facilities, too. As a matter of fact, it was like a right. Us smokers had rights back then. And you non-smokers, we gave you that area right over here, the non-smoking area, right? So when I checked into the mental institution, they gave me decaf coffee, you know, Folgers crystals, remember that? They didn't give us hot water, they gave us warm water, you know, because we're crazy. And they don't give crazy people caffeinated coffee. But I found out they do in AA, and that was good. Because on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they had AA meetings down the hall. And, excuse me, I got the crud here. But Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, they had AA meetings down the hall, and they had caffeinated coffee. They had a whole pot of caffeinated coffee. They always had cookies, and on Friday nights, they had cakes. And some of the people I know in this room are involved in H&I. Could I see the hands of the people involved in H&I? One. The hell are you doing all weekend? Why don't you get involved with H&I? You got a lot of good. The men and the women from H&I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, into Camarillo State Hospital, and they brought in the meetings, right? And it's attraction rather than promotion, right? So they brought in the meetings and they told their stories, but they also brought in filter tip cigarettes and they put them on the coffee table. Now you guys brought them in for me and I stole them. That's the kind of guy I am. So I'm stealing the cigarettes. I smoke one, put one in my pocket and one behind my ear because I'm cool. And that's why I came to AA. And I wasn't an alcoholic. As a matter of fact, I knew for sure one thing is that I was not an alcoholic. I knew that for sure because I knew what an alcoholic was. And that was my dad, and I was never going to be like him. So therefore, non-alcoholic, don't confuse me with the facts, you know. And but what do you want me to say? I'm an alcoholic, you know. I get coffee, cigarettes, cookies. Friday night I get a cake, and sometimes what I think is the smell of non-crazy perfume because women would come in from the outside. That's been debunked, but... So that's why I came to AA. What do you want? What do you want me to say? I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, you know, or I'm a Republican. I'm a Democrat. I used to be a woman. I am a woman. I don't. That stuff came easy because I'm a liar, right? I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. But that's got nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. It just makes it easier. So I came here and I sat wherever I sat and I got involved and I was a reader up here and I read these words eloquently. Had no idea what they meant. I've since got a dictionary, and I understand going to high school for 4 years and quitting in my sophomore year doesn't make me stupid. It makes me uneducated. So there was a lot of words in here like resentment, and I didn't know what they meant. So I got up here and I did all that stuff, and I'd like to be able to tell you it hasn't been necessary for me to take a drink from then till now, but that would be a lie, because it's been necessary for me to drink at least 100 times, you know. When my mom passed away, I come from an alcoholic family. My dad was, let's say he wasn't a nice guy. You know, that some of you have been raised in alcoholic families. You know what I'm talking about. For those of you who weren't raised in alcoholic families, I don't know if I could explain it to you, you know. Like Ricky said to Lucy, some of you are old enough to know what I'm talking about. I can explain it to you, but I can't understood it for you, you know? And that's the deal about growing up in an alcoholic family. And where was I going? I just take little side trips sometimes, I think, and I'm looking at myself talking about what... This is what happens when you get old. I'm not looking at you, but you know what happens when you get old. So, oh, necessary to drink. Thanks. My mom. When my mom passed away. My mom, I don't think she was 5 foot tall. I think she was like 4 foot 11. She had 9 kids. married to my dad. Look at the size of my head. She had nine kids, you know, and when she was, I never heard her swear. Married to that guy, married to that man, and having nine kids, I've never heard her swear. When she smashed her fingers, she would say this stupid, silly thing. She'd say fish cakes, applesauce, and ice cream cone. She was the sweetest lady, and she's my mom. And when she passed away, it was necessary for me to drink. When my brother passed away as a result of the Vietnam War, it was necessary for me to drink. When my girlfriend left me, it was necessary for me to drink. When she came back, it was absolutely necessary for me to drink. But our birthday guy said it, you know, with the stuff that we get taught here, the power that's, they used to be up here. Oh, they're back there. Don't look, I'll show you, they're right there. But if you know, the power that's outlined in this program through those steps is so powerful, even though it's been absolutely necessary for me to drink. As a result of working those steps, I stand here before you. And I have not had a drink since sometime in July back in 1977. I was 26 years old. That's over 10 years ago. Right? It's true. It's all true. No lies up here. To the best of my recollection, I think, is what the lawyer told me to say, right? I'm going to tell you a couple of stories, and then I some of you know me. I like to go through the steps. I think that's the most important thing. Yeah, I am a kind and wonderful person. You guys have a great group up here. The energy is wonderful. And I think that one of the things that we need to... Actually, I'm going to read a paragraph out of the big book. I haven't had a drink since sometime in July back in 1977. And this is the reason why. I'm going to read a paragraph here. And it says... Oh, it works. It really does. It's just that simple. This is a 12-step program because in the beginning there was only six, right? Is this a holiday weekend? It is a holiday for me because I'm retired. They're all holiday weekends for me. But... you know, it's Sunday night, right? Take tomorrow off and finish the steps is what I always say. You know, you can do them, right? In the beginning, there was only six steps. And those six, are you prepared? No? No, you don't? You have the thing? That's okay. Oh, okay. That's a little side talk there. Where was I? No, I got this one. In the beginning, there was only six steps. Can I get one? In the beginning, there was six. Have I said this before? It sounds familiar. In the beginning, there was only six steps. And from the Oxford group, some of you historians know about that. And there was only six steps. And then the society was growing, and it needed some money. It, you know, as things do, as... Your not secretary was talking about the seventh tradition. I mean, it's about, there are expenses. So they had expenses that they needed to. So anyways, Bill W., anybody remember him?
Yeah.
Bill W., my uncle, Bill Wilson. Rick Wilson. And he could be, you know. My dad was kind of the black sheep of the family, so we don't get into. Anyways. Bill needed to get some money, and he didn't want the message to get twisted and garbled. So he decided to write a book. And I know this part is true because I heard it at a meeting. On the way home, after he decided to write the book, on the way home he stopped at Starbucks and got a couple of ad shots in his coffee, went home and he wrote the book. Now, if you did the steps the day before, you only had to do six. Now you got to do 12. I would suggest that you do them now because you know there's a group someplace, probably in Oreo Grande, trying to make this a 24-step program. You know how they always want to change stuff, right? So if you do them now, you only have to do 12. And the reality is that there's only three. Dr. Bob put it in a prescription, and I have some. Kristen has some here. This is an actual prescription written by Dr. Bob. And the three steps are trust God, clean house, and help others. And that's all you really have to do. But I got to tell you, if you're as broken as I was when I came in here, this was impossible for me to do. The only God that I knew was God, damn it. As a matter of fact, I was a God-fearing atheist. So I don't know how to trust God. Clean house, I'm not sure what that's about. What's that got to do? I know I should clean my garage, but... And then help others? What's in it for me? So these are the boiled down... So what Bill did was he showed us how to do these things the same way you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. So he broke it down into the 12 steps there, which I think he didn't invent anything. I think God, in my humble opinion, I think God divinely inspired him to put it in such a way that a knucklehead like me and some of the people that I know could understand and take this thing. I'm going to tell you a couple of stories about me. I'm going to tell you three stories. That'll help me get to 9:15. And three stories. The first one is my first drink. Being raised in an alcoholic family was a lot of ugliness. You know, I can remember laying in bed and listening to my mom crying, calling my name to come down and get this animal off her, and I couldn't do anything. I was just a kid, you know. I tried a couple times, but I was just a little boy, you know. So when I went to school, I was a bedwetter and a thumb sucker, you know, I don't know, past when it was, I've been dry for years now, but when I went to school, I couldn't look at anybody in the eye, you know, I just walked around and I couldn't look, because I thought if we had just that much eye contact that you could see into my soul, and I didn't want anybody in there, it was dark, I was ashamed of who I was ashamed of the things that I was doing, and almost more ashamed of the things that I wasn't able to do, and that would be help my mom. And one day I'm out in the ballpark and I'm, you know, hanging around, and Kevin and I started drinking some whiskey. We had a bottle of whiskey and a bottle of Pepsi, and we put some of this together, and you know, so that we could muscle this poison down. And I was able to relax, I think, for the first time. I remember it going down, making me feel warm, and my shoulders relaxed. And I don't know if I was 11 or 12 or whatever, but my shoulders relaxed. I rocked back on my heels. Hell, it made me feel 5'7" tall. It was glorious. And I remember taking a deep breath and feeling okay. And I thought, God, this is a, doesn't sound like much. Hey, how do you feel? Oh, I feel okay. That sounds like a kind of a crappy answer. But from where I came from, feeling okay was pretty cool, because I never felt okay. Or at least I couldn't remember. But one of the things that happened more than anything else was it took my gaze from here to here. And I was able to look at you in the eye. And I thought, hey, this is pretty cool. It's pretty nice. How you doing? How you doing? And then I took another drink. How you doing? No, not 62, 20, 30s, no. And then I took another drink and I thought, what the hell are you looking at, pal? It changed what I thought you were thinking about me, and it changed the way that I felt. It changed the way that I looked at life, and I felt it made me forget what I was, it made me change what I thought you were thinking about me. Make sense? And from that day to this, I've never tried to quit drinking. I didn't come into Alcoholics Anonymous to quit drinking. I've never had a drinking problem. I have recovered from alcoholism. I no longer suffer from alcoholism. Some of my friends will tell you I suffer from assholism occasionally, but not alcoholism. Because alcoholism is a twofold disease, obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. What Alcoholics Anonymous does, through no direction, no direct way, but we do these seemingly unrelated things. How many of you guys been in here and somebody, you walk up and you say, hey, you know, the IRS is up my keister and I got, oh, I'm 30, 70,000, whatever, $100,000, and I got to get it done by April 15th. And they say, hey, you know, that's a shame. Why don't you put those chairs away? I'm going to tell you three stories. I was the best chair putter awayer. Rick Wilson is my name. You probably have heard me from Oxnard. The best chair putter awayer that we've ever had. Because when I first came here, they said, hey, would you put the chairs away? And I said, yeah, I'll put your damn chairs away. And it actually served a couple of purposes. I'm not a sports guy. I'm not a sports guy, thank you. I don't know if I can do that in this. I can walk and chew gum, but I don't know if I can talk and suck on that. But anyways, but thank you. It was a good try. I have some fudge here, and if any, you know. Thank you very much for the fudge. Where was I? Bum-bum. See, you weren't listening, were you, Mike? He's going, oh, God, do we have to go through this one again? What? Oh, the chair put it away. They said, hey, will you put the chairs away? And I said, yeah, I'll put your damn chairs away. And it works because I'm not a very social guy. You know, I'm really kind of shy. And I don't do sports. So if somebody come up to me and say, hey, how about those Patriots? I'd say, hey, let me put the chairs away and I'll be right back. But what happens if you hang around here for 30 days or so, there's some newcomer come in, have 30 days, and apparently somebody asked them to put the chairs away. And I looked over and I thought, well, he's putting my damn chairs away, you know? And it kind of pissed me off, but I watched him and he wasn't very good at it. So what I did was I put my chairs away and then fixed his, you know, and I felt vindicated. But something that happened was that it went from putting away your chairs, now I was putting away my chairs. And one night I started putting away our chairs. And I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous ever since. So that's how that stuff happens. We do these seemingly, make coffee, pick up cigarette butts. I don't even smoke. What are you talking about? Put the chairs away, put out the, you know, what's this got to do with the IRS? Where's the chapter to the IRS in this book? You know, I don't know. My crops have failed. Where's that one, you know? My wife came back. Where's that one? You know, it's not in there, you know, but we do these seemingly unrelated things, and as a result of doing those, we get to stay sober, we get to know how to live life. So I haven't told you much about me drinking, because this isn't about, I don't have to tell you about my drinking to give you the message, but I do want to tell you, there was a couple of drinking stories that I kind of like to tell, and one of them is, I was asleep one night, and I woke up and I was actually driving down the street, which is kind of exciting. And the reason why I tell you about the high school thing is because, again, it doesn't make me stupid, it makes me uneducated. And I thought, boy, Rick, you could be in an accident. And I was in an incident. I hit a parked car. And now I'm driving a getaway car, right? Because I don't have a license, because I've already lost it for drunk driving. And I'm going to tell you, we used to pay the price back in the day. My last drunk driving cost me $175 of my money, or 10 days in L.A. County Jail. I went to L.A. County Jail for $175. I said, hey, I got enough money. I could collect that. Anyways, that was a stupid thing. But I did get my GED there, so I got my GED from L.A. County Jail. That's kind of cool. So anyways, I'm driving this getaway car, and within a couple of seconds, I realize that this car is in pretty tough shape. As a matter of fact, I'm in a lot of pain. I've broken the steering wheel with my chest. I put my head halfway through the windshield, knocked out my front teeth, and the car is in worse shape than me. It makes about a half a block in this small town in New England. So I get out of the car, throw the keys down, and start to run. What I didn't realize, well, I didn't realize anything, but one of the things that I didn't realize was that there was a cop behind me and he witnessed the whole thing. So as I'm running, he talks over the squawk box thing, you know, the little microphone. And he says the words that I've always hated to hear from cops. He said, "Hey, Rick." And I realized that even if I did get away, it wasn't, you know, it'd be like you getting stopped in Santa Maria, you know what I mean? They said, "Come on." So I threw my hands up in the air and I thought, what could I have done differently? The first thought that came to my mind was, Rick, if you weren't drinking, this wouldn't have happened. The second thought was, if this is the price that I got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, I'm in. You understand what alcohol gives me. And if I got to smash up a few cars, there was a couple of good things about this. One, this wasn't my car. I'd already done it to my car. And, you know, it didn't happen every time I drank, you know. It only happened 2, 3, maybe 4 times a year. But if this is the price that I got to pay to get what alcohol gives me, I'm in. Just like the time that I would rather drink whiskey than anything else, because it would, you know, less input, less output, yeah. Right? You can't drink a case of whiskey, you know. You could do that with a case of beer or a case of wine, but whiskey's more expensive. I don't want to ever miss anything. I don't want to ever come out of the bathroom, because it happened all the time, because it was always happening someplace else, and I always just missed it, right? So I don't want to waste time in there. So I'd rather drink whiskey. But when the funds weren't there, I would drink sweet wine. Some of the good stuff, you know. Boone's Farm, Spignata, or rosé when things were really good. But anyways, I'm drinking Boone's Farm Rapa wine in between paychecks, and I must have got paid. But Boone's Farm, and by the way, Boone's Farm Rapa wine isn't apple wine, really. It's made near an apple orchard, and that's how they got, you know, they call it apple wine. But it has a loosening effect on my bowels, which I'm willing to put up with, right? Whiskey, oh, I didn't like that one. Whiskey, probably true though. Whiskey has a tendency to make me throw up at least the first couple of drinks. And I'm never gonna take my time to take care of business before I go. I'm always on the go. If I'm the designated driver. If we're drinking, I'm driving. So I must have got paid, because I got a glass of whiskey, an iced tea glass full of whiskey, and a bottle under the seat, and I'm pouring down some of this whiskey into my mouth while I'm driving the car on my way out to wherever it was, and I have to throw up. And thank God I got the car over to the side of the road, but I didn't get the window open. And have you ever fallen off your bike or fallen down the stairs? Or, you know how time has a tendency to slow down? You know, it's like... I'm in the middle of throwing up with the windows up. And the thought comes, "Hey, Rick, put your hand over your mouth." Which doesn't help. I mean, you can't stop it. And it came out of every hole in my head, you know, through my nose, out my ears, I think, through my hand, all over the inside of the car, all over me. And at the same time, I filled my pants with the Boone's Farm apple wine, you know? I'd like to be able to tell you that, you know, I was mortified and I haven't had a drink from that day to this. But what happened was I was inconvenienced, you know what I mean? So I'm sitting there and I don't really know what to do, so I turn on the windshield wipers, which... doesn't do anything because it's all on the inside, you know, I have to scrape it down. So I drive home and I hose out the car, change my clothes. Hopefully, for your sake, I took a shower, and then I got up back on the road again and was just continued, and was pissed because I was going to be late now. So that's some of the fun that I gave up drinking. I got a few more other stories like that, but... I'd rather talk about working the steps. I don't know how old I was then, but I do know that by the time I was 26, I'd driven my life into the ground. And I came here, I wasn't an alcoholic, and I sat out there listening to people like me saying stupid stuff. And I'd say, boy, if you just shut up, you could have got away with that. And then I got to the point where I thought, Jesus, too bad I'm not, because this works for these people. I can see they get up here and they share, you know, you get shares and things. Hey, I used to be and now I'm not. And I think, wow, this is great. Too bad this didn't, if I was just an alcoholic, you know. And but I wanted to be paranoid schizophrenic with suicidal tendencies. To me, that sounded more romantic than alcoholic, you know. So anyways, I finally got in. You didn't read it tonight. They do read it at a lot of meetings here in Southern California. It's chapter 3. And they talk about an alcoholic as somebody who has the inability to control and enjoy his drinking. And I thought, oh, that's my in. Because I cannot control and enjoy my drinking. I can do one or the other, but I can't do both. And then I'm in here. And then after a short time, I'm going to work the steps now. Because I know I can get it in an hour and 15 minutes. That joke kind of lost its a while back, right? So I'll stop at 9. So the first 3 steps, I realized after I was looking at the book, I realized that that I'd already worked the first 3 steps. The first step is admitting we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We had a little debate up here where we were going to eat when we got here, and the debate took like, I don't know, well, first I made the decision, and then I was voted out. But it was within 5 minutes we decided where we were going to eat, right? And it was just like that. And you decided when I got up here that you were going to like me or not like me. And I mean, it happened in an instant. Some of you didn't even know you were making a decision. So step one is admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. I think all the work for step one is done before you get here, you know, all the drinking and debauchery and all the crap that you did, you know. And now, because it's Sunday night on the holiday weekend, month or whatever, in Southern California, yeah, we're in Santa Maria, but Southern California, arguably one of the nicest places on the face of the earth, and you're in an AA meeting. Just admit it. You know what I mean? People aren't breaking down the doors to get in here. You know what I mean? And if you were sent here by somebody else, there's a reason probably for that. And sometimes people say, well, we can't tell if you're an alcoholic or not. And that's a bunch of crap. We can pretty much, can we, Jim? We can tell. We can look at them and see what they do and stuff. The only thing is that it doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do you any good for us to, you have to admit it to yourself. When I was 21 years old, I had somebody took a picture of me and I was holding the baby like this. And I looked at that picture and I said, oh my God, Rick, you're bald. And I don't know what happened, but I admitted it right then. I thought about getting a wig for 15 minutes, you know, and if you have one, and I'm not looking at anybody, but if you have one, that's okay too, you know, it doesn't matter. Just for me, I admitted it, and that my life, my hair had become unmanageable, okay? So I think that the only thing that you have to do with step one is just look around and see, look at the person next to you. Now, if they don't look like an alcoholic, I mean, because we don't all look like, I mean, some of us look like alcoholics, but we don't all look like alcoholics, right? And if the guy or gal sitting next to you doesn't look like an alcoholic, this is AA, it's probably you. Anyways, so step two, kind of the same thing, came to believe. How do you do that? Now, if you're in a recovery house or something, or a sponsor that tells you to write, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you're not going to get drunk by writing. But if you listen to what I think is being said there, came to believe, you know, that talks about being over time, coming over time, that you will come. This has been said way before I got here. I came to, and I came to believe, you know. But how do you do that? And I think my interpretation of that is just go to another meeting. If you continue to go to another meeting every day, that you will come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. And if you don't, you won't stay. If you do, you will stay. So step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. And for me, in the beginning, with the God and the God damn it, the only thing I could do was call the group a power greater than me, right? Because the group is. We are more powerful than I am, right? And that's important. And then made a decision. This actually fits the restaurant scenario better, right? Make a decision. Oh, I was saying that in step one, right? Because step one, all you got to do is admit it. You know, you got to see the facts and just admit it. And now we got to make a decision. Okay, after with all these facts, do we want to make a decision? And I think the decision is yeah or no. Well, I mean, it's yes or no, right? And then I realized that I had, to some extent, already made the decision to turn my will and my life, my thoughts and my actions over to the care of God by coming to another meeting and listening to what you said and telling me what to do and putting away your chairs. I had made a decision that I was wanted enough about this to have what you, bug coming? That I, and God as you understood him, which is the important thing, because you don't have to believe in Buddha or Muhammad or Jesus or, you know, Mahatma Gandhi or whatever. You just got to believe in something, God as you understand him. Or in my case, God as I don't understand him, because I don't understand God. Thank God that, you know, really. So I don't know about God's will, right? Somebody say, well, what's God's will? Oh, hey, if it feels good, it must be God. I'd watch out for that one. I pretty much know what God's will isn't. I've got this, and I've got it on a card if you'd like one. And I think Kristen has a few of these, the prescriptions, if you want one. But this is called The Right Path. It says, Dear God, I have no idea where I'm going, as I do not see the road ahead of me, and I do not know where it will end. Nor do I really know myself that I'm following your will. And the fact that I think that I'm following your will doesn't mean that I'm actually doing so. However, I believe this. I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. And I hope I have that desire in everything that I do. And I hope I never persist in anything apart from that desire. I also believe that if I do this, that you will lead me down the right road, though I may know nothing about it at the time. Therefore, I will trust you always, and though I may seem to be lost and in shadow of death, I will not be afraid, because I know that you will not leave me to face my troubles alone. It's a nice little prayer by Thomas Merton, and I have it on my card there. So, again, if you like one. But I do know what God's will is here for you, and that's to do the fourth step. Now, some of you are new here and been around for just a little bit, and you hear people say, well, watch out for the fourth step. And I would tell you to watch out for the people who tell you to watch out for the fourth step. Because the fourth step is the medicine that we have here, right? And everything is done to get you to there. How long does this should it take? I don't know. But I believe this, that the guy who came into the meeting down in Oxnard came in exhausted and he said, I've been working on my fourth step for 6 months. I have 75 pages written, two sides, and I'm about halfway through, is probably not the way that I would recommend that you do it, you know? It's like if I get a tooth pulled, I go to the dentist and I have them, I don't say, hey, pull a little bit out now and I'll be back next week. You know, I have them yank the thing out right then. And so the fourth step is like that. And people say, oh, you know, they get over, you know, what about this and what about that? Well, in the book, it actually asks us to do it in an outline form. Most of you understand what an outline form is. And in the book, it said, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown for the attention that he paid to my wife. That's all it says. And then it talks about the third and the fourth column. And I don't have enough time to go through all of that. But by now, you need a sponsor. You should have a sponsor almost immediately. But now you need a sponsor because there's some integral things in there that need to be explained to you. And you need to understand a little bit. But understand that you're not going to understand until you do it. And even then, you may not have a full understanding of it. Do you understand that? Okay. People would say, well, what about the stuff I don't remember? I say, don't write that stuff down. I went to high school for 4 years. I quit my sophomore year. I can't spell. To this day, I can't spell. My penmanship is not good. So to have to sit down and to write a story, I couldn't do it. But this is what I wrote, my first one. My dad. Let me ask you this. If you're mad at somebody, do you know who it is? Do you know what they did? Write it down. That's all. My dad, Friday Night Football, that's all I wrote. There was column 3 and column 4, but for that part, that's all I wrote. Now, when I sat down and talked to my guy, I wrote, I have a story behind that, and that's when I bring it up, okay? So that's the deal. That's the deal with the four step. And I give you permission not to do it right, to do it incorrectly. The only thing that I won't give you permission to do, by the way, and you can take my social security number, because you'll need this, right, to get your money back? I guarantee you this will work, I really do, all your money back. But I give you the permission to do it wrong, and there's only really one wrong way to do it, and that's not to do it. So you do this in the fourth step, you do this according to the book in an outline form, get it done. You can do it in an hour. You don't need months to do this, right? It's like cleaning out your garage. You know, you take all the stuff out. The things that you want to put back will take a little bit of time, but all the stuff's got to come out so that you can clean it, so you can get in there and get a fresh start. You take the stuff that you learn in the fourth step and you share it with your sponsor. In the book, it has a page and a half or two pages about who you're going to do it with, your priest or whatever. You do it with your sponsor because that's what they're here for. They're here to listen to you. There'll be some differences there, but you want to do it. If you're going to do it with somebody else, get direction from your sponsor. That's what they're there for. So you do step 4, step 5. You're not going to understand it until you do it. People say, well, once I understand it, then I'll do it. You don't get it that way. It comes the other way. The good news is step 6, there's nothing to do. You get a reprieve here. Step 6 says this. There's no action words. These should be up here because I can see them and I know them. But step 6 says there's no action words in there. And if you conjugate the verbs and make it first tense, first person, present tense, it says this. I am ready to have God remove all these defects of character. There's no verbs, there's no action words in there. And people say, well, what if you're not? And I say, well, you have to go back. How far? I'm not sure. It's up to you. Maybe you got to go all the way back to 1, but maybe 3, maybe 4. Step 7, humbly ask him. Step 8 says, in the book, it says, made a list of all the persons that we harm, not the people we don't like. You know, I don't go to say Mike and say, Mike, you know, I've never liked you. I've always thought you were a pompous ass. But now I'm getting ready to believe in God, and I'm sorry you're a pompous ass. We don't do that. It says make amends, and amends, the A-M-E-N, however you spell that, with the S on the end, amends, is not the plural of amend. Amend means to change. Amends is reparations, payback. So as a result of not liking Mike, if I flattened the tires of his car or broke his windows, then I owe him those amends. I need to make it back. I need to make it right. And people say, well, what about, I don't want to give him my money. I say, good. He doesn't want your money, he wants his. And then it says in the book that we've already got this list, that we did it when we did step 4. I've never had somebody come to me with a complete 8-step amends. And by the way, don't do amends until you've talked to your sponsor. You get the list. You may not owe the amends, you know. You'll hear it's silly things in AA, you know. Just, you know, who do I put on my amends list? And people tell you, everybody that you've ever met. You know, I wasn't that good at being bad, you know. But it says that you've already got the list. You made it when you did your 4-step. I would say it's not going to be complete, so kind of massage it. Some of the people that you owe amends to, you never had resentments for. You know, as a result of the resentment against my dad, I broke the windows of your house in the neighborhood. You know, broke your mailboxes, things like that, because I couldn't do it to my dad, so I took my anger out on somebody else. Right? Oh, you know my dad. So then step 9, we make direct amends, you know, when we can do it, we make direct amends to the person. And sometimes that's in a letter form, and sometimes that's over the phone, and sometimes that's face-to-face. And indirect amends is if there's somebody that's not here anymore or whatever, you can donate money to charity or whatever. So those are indirect amends. Step 10. So that's the meat of the program. And step 10 is continue to do these things up to there. And it's not rocket surgery. You know, it's very simple things that we could do. And so we just continue to do these things up to step nine in step 10. Because once I clean out my garage, I can see what's going on there. And if something falls on the floor, I can choose to pick it up. I usually don't right away, but I can choose to pick it up. And I say, I'm going to get that. But the most important thing is that I can see it, that it's there. Oh, yeah, I'm going to keep that. And then step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. I read you the message, right? The message I think that we need to carry, each and every one of us, that we need to carry is that it works, it really does. And to practice these principles in all our affairs, that's the tough part, you know. Now with nobody around, with the eyes, nobody eyes on you, you got to do the things that you've come to know, right? And so that's really what it's all about, except for step 11. Step 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation, prayer talking to God, meditation listening to God, to improve our conscious contact with God, right? I end with that because I think it's important. You know, when I was about 25 years sober, I thought I had this meditation down pretty good. You know, I could meditate for 40, 50, sometimes 60 seconds at a time. And I went through some issues in my sobriety, and I came up with this thing. What was I not doing? And that was meditation. There's a meditation. There's somebody who says that meditation, everybody should meditate for a half an hour every day, unless you're busy. And I know some of you are still working and all that. And for the people who are busy, you need to meditate for an hour every day. And but I tell you that we have one mouth and two ears, and it's more important to listen than it is to talk. And I'm going to shut up in a minute. But I want to end with this. I want to sing you a song, and it's. It's a simple song, and I think you all know it, but it's pretty powerful. It's row, row, row you boat. And if you listen to the words, you know, row, row, row your boat. You are the captain of your boat. Don't let anybody be the captain of your boat. Hence, you cannot be the captains of any other person's boat. So row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Not gotta get this done. Christmas time, I gotta get into Walmart. Blah, 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 blah. Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 for life is but a dream. And I wish you that gentle kindness. God loves you, I love you, and Merry Christmas. By the way, bah humbug, but Merry Christmas. Thank you.